You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Since negative TV ads and the bold accusations made during political debates are now a commonplace in our political system, it probably should come as no surprise that most election campaigns do background research on their opponents. What you might not realize is that kind of research is a multi-million dollar industry carried out at all levels of office, from presidential campaigns to school board elections. In a new book called We're With Nobody, Two Insiders Reveal the Dark Side of American Politics, Alan Huffman and Michael Rajabian, co-partners in the firm Huffman and Rajabian, share stories of the oftentimes tense and occasionally dangerous pursuits in their profession. It's published by William Morrow. I'm very pleased to welcome them to our show today. Alan, welcome back.
Thank you.
So let's begin with you. At the start of most campaigns, the candidates often promise not to engage in negative campaigning because voters say they don't like it. And then not long after, their campaigns turn negative because it works, right?
Yeah, it works. You know, you'd be surprised how many campaigns don't go negative, even when you give them the material, because sometimes we've found we've really good stuff and they chose not to, and it was because they were far enough out that they just didn't feel like they needed to. But there's always stuff to work with. You've always got plenty to work with if they want to go with it.
So it really, if you see an attack ad, it's likely that that candidate is worried?
I think that's safe to say, yeah, usually.
In your introduction, you suggest that you're doing Americans a service by digging up indiscretions from a candidate's past.
We do believe that, but as long as it's based on documented facts, we think that it is. You're selecting these people to lead you, and it's important to know everything you can about them.
Michael, why does it have an impact in some situations but not others? I'm thinking about a number of things that happened recently. Mark Sinodella, a New York senatorial candidate, dropped out of the race because of sexist posts on his website. But the neo-Nazi articles on Ron Paul's old newsletters don't seem to have hurt him much. Barack Obama's recreational drug use when he was younger, that was forgiven, although it's been a problem for candidates in the past.
It's interesting. It's an interesting question, because what we found is a lot of times it's not so much the revelation, but the reaction that really hurts a candidate. And an example of that is how Herman Cain reacted to the assault on him, and how Newt Gingrich reacted to the accusations by his ex-wife. And Herman Cain, you know, went that length and came out very badly, but Gingrich handled it
very
well.
Because he denied the obvious.
Correct.
But Gingrich just simply blamed the press.
Yeah, threw it back on the moderator. It was great.
Mark Sinodella is blaming the Gillibrand campaign for making his computer history a news story. But that's the way it often happens, isn't it? You see somebody as a potential threat and you leak it to a reporter. Is that what you guys do?
Well, we don't actually do the leaking. What we'll do is we turn the information over to the campaign, and then they decide how they're going to go about it. They may leak it to a reporter. They may hold a press conference. They may hold it back and just use it in a debate. You know, they just want to have all the information they can.
So you prompt them with information? Like, if he says something about this thing in his past, you can come back with this zinger?
Well, yes. We're going to give them a report, a complete report, and then we'll pull things out for them that they can use depending on how they want to go about it.
Michael, you write that your friends generally don't understand what you and Alan do for a living. Why is it so hard to explain?
Well, because we are so far in the background. You know, we're kind of in the shadows, and we don't talk a lot about what we do, primarily because we can't. You know, we don't name names in the book because of confidentiality agreements we have. But, yeah, it's difficult to explain, you know, that we're opposition researchers, what that entails.
And you say you don't even tell your children because they might tell their school chums?
No. I actually wrote in the book about my daughter asking me not long ago what I did for a living, and she's a teenager. She was going to meet her boyfriend's parents, and I started thinking, you know, why didn't I explain this maybe a little bit better to them over the years? But, you know, it's just a difficult job to talk about.
But you also say that neither of you are particularly interested in politics, although you tend to work for Democrats.
That's true. I mean, it's not a stretch to say that we're not interested in politics, but we're not as interested as you would expect for someone in our what we were interested in is getting to the bottom of things. We like finding things out. And yeah, we mostly work for Democrats. We'll work for Republicans in a primary against Republicans. But we're primarily working for Democratic campaigns.
You're both a former journalist.
We are.
But what you're doing to some degree is also what a private investigator might do.
To some degree, I think the biggest difference between us and a private investigator is that we're only interested in what can be documented ultimately. And there's got to be a record somewhere for it to be valuable for our purposes.
But shouldn't newspaper reporters be digging these kinds of stories up as part of their mission?
They should, and many of them do. Many
because there are these fact-checking departments in some newspapers.
Right. But you know, I think a couple of reasons there that they don't as much as they used to is just because of the state of the newspaper business as a whole. And two, there are an unlimited number of delivery mechanisms out there now for information that people are getting their information from, some good and some bad.
Well, you write that while the media are prone to distortion, you two are merely seekers of truth. Isn't that a bit of a distortion here? How is how are the media prone to distortion? You mean they just simply publish whatever they hear, every rumor that they hear?
Well, I think that the distortion mostly comes because of what's going on, just the internet and blogs and all of these things. Well, and any TV station that has a bias, whatever, you can put things out there, and we treat factual documentation the same way that we treat punctuation in email now. It's not something people look for or really care much about anymore, and that's how things get distorted.
My guests are Alan Huffman and Michael Rajabian. They have written a book called We're With Nobody, Two Insiders Reveal the Dark Side of American Politics. And you point to rumors that President Obama is a secret Muslim as an inspiration to keep doing your job. Didn't those rumors begin with the people who put together negative campaigns?
I think Alan wrote that chapter.
And I think it goes back.
Did you write alternating chapters here?
We did. We alternated chapters. And in that case, the rumors are the problem. That's the key word there. You know, for us, rumors are not useful unless they lead us to documentation. So when something assumes a life of its own, just truth by repetition, and there's no underlying documentation, those are the things that we consider anathema.
But rumors can be just as damaging as something that's true because they confirm what people already want to believe. And so it didn't matter whether the president's birth certificate was finally produced. There's still birthers out there.
It's true, and that's the danger, and that's the for us, it's a cause for concern because sometimes the truth is not really what matters.
Now, you call what you do OPPO?
Right? OPPO, that's the short.
How widespread a practice is it? Are there many people who are working in this field?
You know, there are a handful of us who really do this, do what we do, which is, you know, get on the ground, go to these places, and, you know, run the gamut of research. But it's a big business, and most every campaign that has money to spend will hire opposition researchers because you have to assume that if you're not doing it, your opponent is. And it's a pretty big business.
And shouldn't we also assume that almost everybody has something embarrassing in his or her past?
Yes. I think we found two over the course of 18
years. Who was totally
years.
Exemplary?
Two people.
I'm not voting for that
one of them had never done anything, and that was, you know. That
sounds
just
boring.
It is rare, especially the higher you get in the scale.
So has your research ever affected the way you feel about a candidate? Because you also have to research your candidate as well as the opposition, don't you?
I think the biggest – the thing that's most surprising to people when we talk about our work is that we sometimes find that our candidate is the worst of the two, and that's always disappointing.
And then what happens? Well, first of all, if you stick with the campaign, you have to help the candidate figure out ways to deflect the criticism.
Right.
But does it ever just lead you to say, you know, this person is just too dirty, I don't want to do it?
No,
I
mean, because our job is to collect those facts and to give a report to the campaign. Now, what they do with that information or how they decide to proceed after that is up to them. And it's really not done in any kind of willy-nilly fashion. I mean, this is a process. So when people see these ads on TV, they need to understand how they got there, the process that this information went through to get on TV. And so it's not just somebody saying, okay, here's a great fact, let's throw it out there. No, there are polls that are taken, there are strategy meetings that take place. I mean, it's a very It's a very precise process.
And you pass on information to the pollsters, too, don't you?
We do.
It helps them to fashion the question?
We turn in a report. The pollsters will go through it and come up with their questions. And sometimes they match what we've got, and sometimes they don't. And so they'll usually get us on a conference call and say, do you have the documentation to support this question?
And then they ask a question like, would it bother you if Leonard Lopate stole $1 million from our employer?
Exactly.
Which, of course, is a way of saying that
exactly.
the other candidate did this. How did the two of you get into this?
Well, we were both worked at the same newspaper, and then both of us sort of made segues into politics. Michael went to work for a mayor, and I went to work for a governor, and my governor was defeated for reelection, and we were just sort of looking for a different kind of business to go into. And I guess the political contacts that we had were what somebody came to us because, you know, if you're a reporter, you have to know how to get to the bottom of things. And it's a skill that's not that really, that widespread. And so we ended up got one contract for one project and found that we liked it and that we were pretty good at it.
And then that led to others, political campaigns, also business people.
Right. We do on occasion.
You write that sometimes you're not hired directly by campaigns, but rather by third parties who have something at stake in an election. In the wake of the Citizens United ruling, do you expect to get a lot more work from the super PACs?
I mean, I think that the amount of money that's being poured into those is just phenomenal. So, and everybody's complaining about the negative ads because of that, but you're not going to see those go away anytime soon. So, sure, you know, we'll get folks like us, people who work on campaigns, that's where that money's going.
Now, you mentioned that the negative ads tend to be in campaigns that are in trouble. And right now, Mitt Romney is not attacking his opponents, and he's attacking Barack Obama.
Right.
A sign that, as far as he's concerned, he has the nomination wrapped up?
Well, at least that's what he thinks. And you know, but there just to say that he's not attacking his opponents, though, that's part of what you're talking about, the super PACs. He doesn't have to, because there are plenty of people doing it for him that are not, you know, you don't have that little tagline at the end of the ad that says, I'm Mitt Romney and I approve this ad. He's not being held accountable for ads that are targeting his opponents.
How is this any different from what we saw during the Bush Dukakis campaign with the Willie Horton ads? Weren't they run by third parties?
No. Bush didn't have his fingerprints directly on those, on the Willie Horton ads, but they came from his campaign ultimately.
Is that right? I don't remember.
I think so.
Honestly, I don't remember exactly if those came from.
Because I would assume that in some cases there would be a concern about deniability. Well, I didn't do mm-hmm. it. You know, I mean, Ron Paul is saying that right now about those terrible things that appeared in his newsletter. Oh, I had nothing to do with it. I just signed my name to newsletters.
Right. Yeah, it seems like a pretty weak defense. I think the biggest difference is you can undertake such a huge ad campaign now. There's no limitations on the amount of money that you can spend through a super PAC. So the extent of what you can do is much, much greater now than it was with Willie Horton era.
My guests are Alan Huffman and Michael Rajabian. They're partners in a firm that does opposition research. We'll find out how they actually go about doing it after we take a little break. Their book, Wherewith Nobody, is published by William Morrow. Stay with us. I'm talking with the partners in the firm Huffman and Rajabian. That is Alan Huffman and Michael Rajabian. They've written a book called Wherewith Nobody, Two Insiders Reveal the Dark Side of American Politics. It's published by William Morrow in a trade paperback original. And Alan, you write, you're guided by the conviction that no one is fit to lead unless proven otherwise. It sounds rather cynical. Or is that just, are you just being realistic?
Well, what's the difference? It's cynical realism, I guess. It is a bit cynical to say that, but that is kind of the way we have to approach it, because we're going to be looking for the weaknesses in all of these candidates. It's just the nature of the beast.
And you also say that the two of you sometimes feel like relics of a simpler era, gathering old-timey facts while everyone else obsesses over incorrect or rumors or distorted facts. So you're doing just old-fashioned detective work?
Yeah, and I think the reason that we feel that way is that because what we were discussing earlier about all the different mechanisms for distributing things that aren't necessarily true, people don't really expect things to be documented the way they once did. You know, it used to be you got all your information from newspapers and TV, and they were more accountable, and, you know, they were more likely to be able to cite documentation. Not so much the case now.
I'd assume that some clients send you out to look for dirt on their opponent with an idea of what's going to turn up. What happens if you say, no, that's not the case?
Oh, it happens often that it's not the case.
Yeah, so many times we go out and they've heard something and we go out and check it out. And it all comes back again to what Alan said earlier, documentation. And our motto in our business has always been that if we can't document it, we can't use it. And I think that's very important in this business because it does a disservice to the voters if they don't have that documentation.
Does your research ever take you beyond the candidates themselves, for instance, to their staffers, their relatives, et cetera?
Sometimes a relative, that it's got to be pretty strong to go to a relative. It's got to have implications for the candidate themselves. It's like, I mean, for example, if it was someone's wife was in trouble, you know, that's not likely. Maybe she was having drug abuse problems. That's not the kind of thing you would go for.
Well, in some cases, like Mitch Daniel, his wife just simply left him for a while and then came back, and yet he felt that was important enough to keep him out of the presidential mix. At least until he did his rejoinder to the State of the Union address and everybody realized that he wasn't exactly the most compelling speaker.
Right. Well, and that may have had more to do with someone who just wanted to keep his family out of that that brutal limelight.
But, and do you run into that a lot where people say, you know, I can deal with this, but I'm not so sure I want to put my family through this meat grinder?
Sure. I think Haley Barbour is an example of that. If you read the media accounts of why he didn't run, that was pretty much what he said. And his wife didn't want him to run either. So, yeah, it happens. But people's personal lives in what we do, opposition research, is really very tricky. You know, you've got to handle that a certain way because, you know, a lot of the voters many times don't care about that at the end of the day.
The title of your book, We're With Nobody, suggests that you have to maintain a certain amount of anonymity in your line of work. So is that what happens? People ask you, who are you with?
Well, usually when we go into a courthouse and we're looking for something about someone who's well known and within that building, and when you start asking for the tax history of this person, and you know, maybe the clerk, you know, wants to know what you're up to or whatever, and they always would ask, "Who are you with? Now, who are you with?" And we would just get it everywhere we go. It sort of became a joke after a while, and we would always just say we were with nobody, and because you don't have to be with anybody. These are all public records, but. People give you the impression that you do.
They get protective?
A little bit, yes.
Where does your research usually begin? In the public courthouse?
Our research always begins on the Internet, and that's where we build our foundation.
But the Internet is reliably inaccurate, I know.
It is.
Exactly. Based on my own Wikipedia entry.
Absolutely. It is unreliable.
I try to fix it, and then somebody fixes it back to incorrect.
But it is unreliable. But it does give us a starting point. It does give us the information we can go and verify. But at the end of the day, we always end up on the ground. We always end up in these places where these people live. And we're going through records at a courthouse or a government office.
And you're right that the job is taken to some unique places around the country. Where have some of the stranger meetings taken place?
You can take that one. I know you want to
talk
about
New Jersey. That's in the first chapter of the book. This book is much about opposition research. It is about this political road trip that we've been on for 18 years, and it's about taking people along for the ride with us. But New Jersey was an example of where we were doing research there, and we were picked up actually in an unmarked police car and taken to this clandestine meeting on the Jersey waterfront. And
by somebody who wanted to give you some information?
No, who wanted us to do research against an opponent.
Uh-huh.
And so we were actually taken into the, you know, into the stereotypical smoke-filled room, and it was just very surreal. So those are the kind of things that—
Did you take that job?
We did take the job, and we got stiffed on that job because these guys decided at the end of the day they didn't really have what it took to follow through with the research, and they ended up actually stiffing
us. The only time we've ever been stiffed on a job.
Yeah, we don't want to give the impression that it's easy to stiff you.
No, it's never it's good not. To alienate the oppo guys. You don't want to make us mad. They got the dirt on everybody.
So what happens when you meet somebody who has a lead, something that you can use? Are they generally eager to start talking, or do you have to do things to get them talking?
Oh, it varies. You know, sometimes people are reluctant. And you have to kind of, you know, coax the information out of them. Sometimes people are overeager to talk, and you never know which one is going to produce results.
Overeager could also mean that they're not necessarily giving you the real truth.
Right, or they've got an axe to grind.
You write that the way you react to the information they're feeding you is critical.
Actually, I wrote that in a chapter about a woman I was interviewing, an ex-wife, and she the conversation was actually pretty mundane until it got to a certain point where she revealed this information that was just kind of really startling to me. But at that moment, you know, you have to really kind of rein it in and act like, you know, it's nothing different than anything else you're asking her, because that can put people off. That can scare them.
Well, how can you determine whether this is real information or somebody has an axe to grind or somebody is even crazy?
Well, you have to document it. I mean, you have to – just because someone tells you that their husband is cheating on them, I mean, without the documentation, really, what do you have? You just have someone's word. So in that case, I mean, I actually had to go document, track down a report that she had referenced. Without it, I had nothing. Mm-hmm. So,
And I have to throw in that sometimes crazy people can lead you to documentation.
But there's also usually a paper trail.
Right.
That's how you finally confirm whether it's true or not.
Right.
You're right that sometimes the opposition candidates will tip you off as to if you've found something damaging or not. They'll resign. That's a good way, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or launch an offensive against what they think you're going to reveal.
Well, they're ready for. I mean, just like us. I mean, one purpose of our research is to prepare our candidate for attacks. So the other side is doing the same thing, and they're researching their candidate the same way. So at the end of the day, you have it. You know, it's a war, for lack of a better term. So what you want is as many weapons in your arsenal as you can have.
But do they always know? There have been a number of incidents in American politics, presidential politics, or vice presidential politics, where it seems the vetting wasn't complete and something really shocking came up later. It hurt George McGovern with his first vice presidential choice.
You know, to us, it's most shocking when that happens now, because it seems like everyone should know that if it's out there, it's going to come out. But a lot of times when we do the self-research, as we call it, for our candidate, they won't tell you. We first interview the candidate. He's not going to tell you everything that he knows about himself, because he's hoping it's not a big deal. And sometimes they get very angry when you tell them what you found. And so I think there may
But if you found it, somebody else would.
Exactly. And that's what we tell them, too. But that doesn't necessarily make them feel any better.
Other campaigns have resorted to what you call dazzle camouflage in response to the claims found about them. What's that?
You want to take
Well, it's making you see something. It's really putting something out there to hide what you really should be seeing is dazzle camouflage. I think an example we gave in the book was George Bush and the economy and the Gulf War. I mean, there are things that you can do to kind of camouflage what's really going on, what people really should care about.
Sometimes it's just a matter of just confusing the issue. I mean, dazzle camouflage literally is a naval term it means to fool the eye with conflicting signals. And so if you throw a bunch of things out there, and I think Newt Gingrich is probably a master of dazzle camouflage, you just throw a lot of things out there that confuse the issue for people who are trying to make decisions about it.
The subtitle of my guest book is Two Insiders Reveal the Dark Side of American Politics. Alan Huffman and Michael Rajabian's work is all about research that you normally never know about until it hits the headlines. The title is We're With Nobody, and it's published by William Morrow in a trade paperback original. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Alan, you write that many campaigns are uncomfortable about directly initiating talk of a scandal, even if it could seriously damage the opponent. Why? Are they afraid that it's going to come back to that come back to bite them?
I think so. You're always taking a calculated risk when you go negative. And so, you know, sometimes you become associated with just the negativity, not necessarily even being criticized for going negative, but it's just something uncomfortable and unpleasant that people associate with you as well.
Do you make suggestions on how to reveal this information?
Sometimes.
Because sometimes just a direct attack is the wrong way, but people do it with leaks, with spins, all sorts of other things.
Right. If they ask us to do that, we will. But oftentimes we just turn in the information and that's the end of it for us. It varies from one campaign to another.
And you said that sometimes you've turned up something really juicy about an opposing candidate and the campaign you're working for refused to make it public. Can you make it public now?
No. You know, as we mentioned earlier, if they're public records, those are all, you know, available. But if it's confidential, if it was confidential to the campaign, then we're not at liberty to reveal it.
Yeah, somebody have to find it on their own.
So everything that's in the book is supported by public records.
I was just hoping that we were going to get some kind of a headline story here as a result of this. You've released this book in the middle of a campaign season. What do you hope that readers will take away from these stories?
Well, we hope that it allows them to see really what goes on behind the scenes that ends up, you know, in their mailboxes, on their television screens, on their radio, the process that goes into campaigns. And at the end of the day, that voters, when they go into the voting booth, will have a better knowledge of who they're voting for, that they won't walk in there with blinders on or tape over their eyes and just pull the closest button.
I think we also want people to understand two things. One, that you should be sure that what you're hearing about this candidate is documented and true. And the other is that you can get to the bottom of things. It's possible to find out what's true. You don't have to just become overwhelmed by this barrage of information that's coming at you.
Listeners have been writing in. One listener points out that Barack Obama ran many negative attack ads in 2008 and wonders why that image didn't stick with him.
The image of being negative didn't stick with him? Well, you know, I'm not sure specifically what ads the listener's talking about.
The Hillary Clinton campaign.
Oh, okay. I guess just because of his delivery, probably more than anything. You know, he presented such an attractive persona that it's possible that that's how he was able to slide those things through without them sticking to him as a negative character. But I'm guessing on that. Do you have any?
And he won.
Yeah, Tom asks, can you recommend a handbook on research or reporting that helped you when you started out?
I think it was just our training in journalism and in the newspaper business, how to go out and collect facts and to interview people and like Alan says, to get to the bottom of things and to come back and be able to put together a good story.
Well, you do provide tips here on how to deal with public record clerks and the such. Toward the end of the book, we learn that you both are constantly warning off job offers that have come close to breaking apart your partnership. Are you still – well, you seem to be happy with each other right now.
Well, that's a relative term.
Yeah, they're very relative.
Is this a day-by-day thing?
We've been doing this for 18 years, and we can irritate each other, I can assure you.
Yeah, you can imagine it's kind of volatile sometimes riding in the Hyundai on the interstate.
But what's the problems? A candidate approaches you or a campaign approaches you and one of you is really hot to take it on. The other one says, no way, I don't want to work for these people.
Yeah, and I don't think it's happened that many times, but there have been a few. One that is mentioned in the book that, you know, threatened to sort of derail the business, because sometimes you do think, maybe I would like to be with someone. You know, we can see ourselves as independent and we like that. But every now and then you kind of get the urge to just sort of cast your lot with someone, and that's usually how it happens.
Well, didn't you have to turn down a job offer at the White House in order to publish this book?
Basically, yes.
Yeah. So that was an example of that sort of thing?
Yes.
Can you tell us who you're currently working for?
Campaign-wise?
No.
Just one other thing. When something happens, like we mentioned Haley Barbour earlier, and when he left the governor's mansion, he He let an awful lot of people out of the jails. It's called a big scandal. Should I assume that that's an indication that Haley Barbour has decided to drop out of politics for the rest of his life?
It would be very difficult. I would take the list as an opposition researcher. I would take the list of every one of those pardoned inmates, and I'd put it in a file somewhere. And 10 years down the road, if he came back and decided to run again, I'd pull it out, and I'd find out what happened to every one of those inmates and what they've done since then. So, yeah, it's a very good indication.
And even if all of them have lived perfectly fine lives except one, that person becomes the subject
Willie
of
Horton.
A TV ad.
Yeah.
And the odds are not in favor of them all living perfect lives because they all had problems in the past, too. So you can expect there's going to be some problems.
Alan Huffman and Michael Rajabian, their book, We're With Nobody, Two Insiders Reveal the Dark Side of American Politics, published by William Morrow. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thanks for having us.